Welcome to The Mother-Daughter Journey, a podcast for women working through the tenuous transition of a maturing mother-daughter relationship. I'm Abigail.
And I'm Kelly. We know firsthand that the mother-daughter relationship is one of the most fabulous,
yet frustrating,
relationships you are ever going to have. Even so, we're best friends, business partners, and of course, mother and daughter.
So join us as we share our ongoing journey and the lessons we've learned along the way. Hello, friends. Welcome to The Mother-Daughter Journey.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back.
Today's episode is going to be all about negative thinking patterns. You know, everyone's
favorite topic.
Conversation topic.
No, really, everybody at some point in life falls prey, I will say, to one of these negative negative thinking patterns, maybe more than one. And so it's good to become aware of them so that you can catch yourself when you are falling prey to one of them.
Exactly.
Right.
And something I would like to add on to that is, like K-Dog said, they're very common. We all, it's like a natural human thing to do, to fall back on these negative thinking patterns or negative thinking habits. I like using that word just because it kind of reminds me that just because I'm in the habit of something or in a pattern doesn't mean that can't be shifted or broken.
Right. A friend that we actually just spoke to today reminded us that we choose.
We choose. Right. And that's the same for our thoughts.
Yes.
To some degree, right? Obviously, we can't control all of our thoughts, but we can
become aware of them
and then choose to reframe them.
Yes. So anyway, let's just dive right in to the, we have 10 of these negative thinking patterns that we're going to talk about.
Whoop, whoop.
First one being all or nothing thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is exactly what it sounds
like. Exactly what it sounds like. It's black or white thinking. I'm coming to mind.
This or that.
This or that, exactly. And it's bringing me back to the height of being lost in our mental illness days, right? Like, this is what life is going to be like forever.
Yes.
Right? This is all. This is what our life is going to be like. We have this thing, and this is what it's like. There is no climbing out of this, whatever you want to call it, darkness.
Right.
And, you know, we talk about for the first 5 years, that's where we lived. We lived in that all or nothing thinking.
Right, because it had to be one or the other.
It was
either, we were still in with the fix-it mentality, right? So it was either, I walk with mental illness, which means I have to be, and this is inaccurate, but these were the false beliefs that we had at the time.
Right.
I walk with mental illness, so that means I can't contribute to society the same way other people can. I just can't.
I lack.
I lack, right?
Yes.
But like, so it's either fix it and be normal and a contributing person, human in society, or have mental illness. And it's like, no.
That's not the case. Exactly.
It's not the case.
But it's just an example of all or nothing thinking.
Yes.
Right?
And one that we fell prey to for a while.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. And then next I'm going to say we have glasses.
Glasses on. Let's take a look at these notes.
Overgeneralization.
Which is kind of similar to all or nothing thinking.
Agreed.
But it's a little different. When I think of overgeneralization, I think always never.
Elaborate a little bit.
Sure. So one, let's just use like some minuscule example, right? For instance, I am applying for jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I put in 3 applications and 2 of them come back. No thanks. If I am overgeneralizing, falling prey to that, I'm now going to say to myself, great, I'm never going to get a job.
Yes.
This is never going to happen for me. Or, hey, I did get a job and the first couple days aren't exactly what I thought they were going to be. And so this is always going to suck.
Right.
So never, always.
Okay. So third, we have mental filter. And this one is, we hear it all the time, really. What you focus on expands. if you focus on the negative, right?
You and I hear it all the time, and we say it all the time.
And we say it all the time, right? Maybe not everybody does, but it is.
Stop overgeneralizing. Everybody hears it all. No.
See? Fall prey. But yes, mental filter is basically what you focus on expands. So if you focus on things that need to be improved and you focus on the negative things that you see in the world, or the negative news that's coming in, or then that's what is going to expand in your life. You're going to start noticing more of it.
Exactly.
As opposed to if you start noticing the birds are singing and the sun is shining and the, right? It's a matter of changing neural pathways in your brain, and it's a thinking pattern.
It's a thinking pattern. Well, this is, we've talked about gratitude, right?
Right.
And how gratitude is actually a healthy thinking pattern that we try to implement. And it's kind of the opposite of this mental filter, right? Like we said when we talked about gratitude with Lisa Condon, right? Yeah. In one of our previous episodes, It actually does change the brain chemistry.
And so it's not really the opposite. It's still a mental filter. It's just, right. Again, we choose, right?
It's the positive mental filter versus the negative mental filter.
Exactly. Okay.
What's next?
Disqualifying the positive.
Oh, speaking of.
Which I think every single person I have ever known has fallen into disqualifying the positive. Gosh. Because
at least once or twice. Well, yeah. I mean,
let's just talk about compliments. How often do you get a compliment where you're like, oh yeah, but let me tell you about this other thing I'm not so great at.
Or even, oh yeah, but I only, you know, do this because X, Y, and Z made it possible for me, not from my own merit.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, yes.
We downplay compliments a lot, don't we?
That's one way that we disqualify the positive. I mean, there's many ways to do it, but that's an easy example of just showing when something good is happening, we are always kind of waiting, not always, but with this thinking pattern, kind of waiting for the next shoe to drop. Like, oh gosh, things are good. Yikes. Let me look for the sky that's about to fall.
Yes, that's a piece of it. And also saying, oh, things are good, but not good enough because I don't have this, this, and that.
Right, because I still haven't achieved yada, yada, yada.
Yes, like it's good, but it doesn't count because I don't have all of the other good things that I want.
Right, it's the pursuit of happiness, right? That people talk about, like, I'll be happy when I have graduated, or I'll be happy when I've gotten married and have a family. I'll be happy when I buy a house, right? It's exactly. That kind of, yes. All right.
And in the process, we discount all of the things that could make us happy right now.
Exactly.
So.
The next one is, we have talked about this one and we have definitely fallen prey to it. Every mother and daughter probably have, is jumping to conclusions.
Yes.
And there's actually two forms to this negative thinking pattern. One is mind reading and the other is fortune telling.
So this one was huge in our relationship.
Right.
In particular. And that's why we'll talk about a lot, perceived expectations.
Yes.
Right? If you go way, way back to one of our first or second episodes and we talk about all the things that make this relationship in particular so difficult, perceived expectations was one of them, which basically is mind reading. It's a negative thinking pattern that you and I were so used to. It got handed down, you know, from generation and generation. And so we were mind readers, at least we thought we were.
We thought we knew what the other person wanted and expected and how they wanted it done.
Absolutely.
And
what they were thinking about us,
too. And what they were thinking about the fact that we either did or did not do it in either a specific time frame or in a specific way or with a specific outlook while we were performing it.
And I remember doing this one a lot as a kid, too, just in I'm not even talking family dynamics, just other social settings. Every move I made was analyzed with, well, what will person X, Y, and Z think about? Oh, they're going to think this. They're going to think that.
And that was passed down to you again, generation to generation, right?
And you just get caught in that. And that was one of the most dangerous traps for me.
And personally. Not being aware of it.
Right, exactly.
Being aware that you're thinking what everybody else is thinking, but not understanding that it's a negative thinking pattern and it doesn't actually matter.
Exactly. One, it doesn't actually matter what they're thinking.
Exactly.
And on the other hand, I always used to have to remind myself too that they're probably not even thinking about you.
That's right? The other thing.
And I don't mean that negatively, but like.
But no, but it's true. We're so busy being worried about what other people are thinking of us.
Yeah, because we're so egocentric, right?
Not most people, but people who have been putting in the work and kind of sifting through all these negative thinking patterns and most of the stuff that we talk about, they are not thinking about us.
Right.
At all.
Right.
So, yes,
and
agreed.
If they are thinking about us, it's, you know, going back to probably a them problem anyway.
Well, and we just, again, with a negative thinking pattern, we're always, for whatever reason, I shouldn't overgeneralize here, but we assume that they're thinking of us in a negative way.
Right.
Which it kind of gets back to, well, this is how we're thinking about ourselves. It's like we, all of this stuff just builds on each other. The things that we're talking about, relationship with self is at the core of this.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, let's talk fortune telling.
Right. See, this one I didn't have as much experience with.
So this one I did, especially with the things that we had gone through. Anytime you are outside of a specific range or sphere, or I couldn't gauge your mood or mental capacity or bandwidth at the time.
Right. Yeah, where I was, basically.
Well, even afterwards, when I was still trying to like let go and work through it, you were fine. But I was fortune-telling some catastrophe or something that was, right? Oh, this person could say this that could set off that. Or she might not get enough sleep that could set off. Like, I was forever forecasting your future and how it would unfold.
Actually, now that you're
talking, didn't make all the right moves.
Right. Now that you're talking, I used to do that the nights I used to lay awake, you know, back in the good old days when I never slept because my brain was just racing all the time. I did do a lot of fortune telling, actually, of like, okay, here's how the day is going to go tomorrow. This is how this person's going to react if I say this. So I need to say this instead. And that's how they're going to react.
Right.
And yeah, I would try to like plan out. You know, like I could control other people or something.
Exactly.
You're trying to plan it out,
which,
and
you know,
predict the future.
Mind reading and fortune telling all have this like element of control, right? Anticipating somebody else's moves, thinking that you have control over them.
Right.
Or that you have something that you do can influence it in some way or form, when in reality is no.
No.
Okay. So let us move on to catastrophizing or minimization.
Right? This is a nice kind of flow that we have set up as.
And, actually, you know, catastrophizing is very much what we just talked about with fortune telling, right? We turn a mountain into a molehill. We go from...
I haven't heard that saying in so long.
But we do.
We do.
We tend to think with this particular thinking pattern in worst case scenarios.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I love my boyfriend dearly, but I'm going to throw him under the bus here. This is definitely like the one that he falls prey to and I'm constantly catching.
Yes. And I would say, though, that you're on the other end of the spectrum.
Oh, God,
right?
I am.
With the minimalization.
It's dangerous for me, the minimization.
If you're not catastrophizing, you're like, oh, that's not a big deal. Like, you know, I haven't filed my taxes, but that's not a big deal, right?
Stop hitting the nail on the head perfectly, okay? Oh, my gosh.
But I'm just saying, so you are, not that you haven't filed your taxes, but I'm just, that's how you are.
Maybe I haven't, and maybe it's not a big deal.
Okay.
Maybe it is.
Next. Emotional reasoning.
Oh, okay. Emotional reasoning. So that is basically I feel it, so it must be true.
Okay.
Right?
Elaborate again.
So it kind of can interlace with a few of these other ones, right? So
well, they are, everything's
they all kind of do. But let's say, for instance, a specific example.
Well, here. I feel that someone doesn't like me, so they must not like me. Mm-hmm. Or I feel like I'm not good enough to audition for yada yada, so therefore I'm not.
Yes. And then there's also how it plays into conversations.
Okay.
Right? So we will talk about conversational baggage, like
yes.
what you're bringing to a conversation. So emotional reasoning can happen. It's something that you can get caught up in emotionally
charged conversations
because conversational baggage, right? That includes like our beliefs, our past traumas and triggers. So something, you can be having a conversation with somebody, a past trigger makes you angry, right? Mm-hmm. You feel anger in your body, but it's from something else other than what's actually happening right in front of you.
Right.
Right. So you can, if you allow yourself to, because we are both, we are logic, we're logical thinking human beings, and we're emotional feeling beings, right? And so we need to take both things into account in all situations. That's how you respond and not react.
Right.
And so, you know, in emotionally charged conversations, if you just blindly believe your emotions to be
feelings, because like, a lot of that is triggered from a past thing that you...
It can be. So you, like, if you just blindly trust that, and I'm saying don't, not to trust your feelings, right? Feel your feelings, analyze your feelings, where they come from.
But again,
but
respond.
But don't blindly trust them.
Right. Right. Don't react to your feelings.
Right. And so just because you feel it doesn't make it true.
Right. The feeling is true. But
yes.
Where you are labeling the origination of the feeling may not be.
Right. So that's why this one is kind of...
Yes.
It's very interesting because it's a fine line of... I'm not saying downplay your feelings. That's
right.
That's not at all what I'm saying here. But be aware of where they're coming from and make sure that they are true to the situation at hand and not coming from something else.
Yeah. And
like a negative thinking pattern, maybe. Or a past experience.
Exactly. Perfect. So this next one, I'm just going to name. We're not really going to talk, but it's shooting yourself.
Yeah, I was like, we have like a whole episode on that one. Yeah,
so. I mean, we have the swear jar with should on it and all of that. But basically, the word should brings judgment to the conversation.
Yeah.
The word should brings judgment to your point of view of self and others. Mm-hmm. And the word, yes. That should be a very expensive word. That should be a very expensive word on your swear jar.
Yes.
Is all I can say.
Yes. Yeah. And especially once you start, this was a big one for me too. Right?
Yes.
Once I started to kind of become aware of and analyze these negative thinking patterns, I shoulded the crap out of myself. And others.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh, there's so much freedom when you get rid of the word should. And obviously we still use it.
Still use the word should, but we catch ourselves every single time that we use it. Not every single time. We're still practicing, but 90% of the time. And there are instances where the word should
be used.
Should be used.
Yeah.
But it is definitely not as frequent as it is used.
Right. Especially in my self-talk these days.
So that's an exercise to combat negative thinking patterns. And we'll use this one, which we said we weren't going to talk about, but here we are because it's so important.
Oops, here we are.
When we work with our clients on communication and conversation and, you know, their relationship, the first thing we try to say is, as homework or as an exercise, is try to, if you're able to mentally record, great. I can't do that. Try to record in a day or however, you know, set yourself a time period. You use the word should with yourself and you use the word should with the people that are in your life that you're trying to improve your relationship with. Not as judgment, just as a matter of fact. How often is the word should being used? And then once you look at that, and especially when you're using the word should to yourself, why? And what is the emotional reaction that you're having when you are using that with yourself?
Right.
Then you can step back and move it to the next level and say, okay, this is the emotion and reaction that I am putting on myself, and I know what I'm thinking in my mind. And now I've used it for somebody else, and they are either fortune telling or assuming or jumping to conclusions with what I said with this judgmental word of should. So now what emotions are being evoked in them that's now added to our conversation and our situation?
And it's all because of that, like, one word, right?
That one word. Exactly.
Also, according to whom is something I always ask myself.
Yes.
Right? When I find myself shoulding.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm shoulding on myself.
Or others.
The question I ask a couple episodes ago, we were like, ask why. For this one, ask according to whom.
Right. Okay. Let's carry on here.
Carry on.
Oh, and this is another one we talk about. Labeling and mislabeling.
Oh.
And this is like vast and wide. It can be applied to so many different situations. Mm-hmm. It can be applied to emotions. We do this all the time. Certain emotions are bad. We label them as bad because we are uncomfortable with the feelings. Mm-hmm. Certain emotions are good because we're like, yeah, we want more of that dopamine or whatever it's giving our bodies. And so we label feelings as one or the other. And we kind of project that onto people. Because if we're uncomfortable with a specific feeling that we've labeled as bad, mm-hmm. we don't want people around us experiencing that feeling either. Or bringing that energy into our spheres.
Right. And sometimes, too, it goes back to there's a little bit of judgment involved. Because
sometimes.
Depending on the feeling, right? Yes. Because we label feelings as good, bad, right, or wrong.
Yes. We then label the person associated.
Right. So even ourselves, right? So we'll say, oh,
exactly.
I shouldn't be feeling this way. It's wrong of me to feel this way. Because this is a bad or incorrect feeling.
Because we've labeled the feeling instead of just realizing that every single emotion out there is a part of human life.
Exactly.
It's a part of our human experience. And we are going to feel it at some point mm-hmm. in time within our lives.
So I say it again. We're not discounting feelings here. We're just labeling them properly so we can...
According to Abigail and Kelly.
So that we can... understand where they come from and understand how to maneuver and all of those things.
Well, it's easier to sit with something
how
that
to regulate.
You... It's easier to sit with a feeling because we just obviously turned this into a feeling talk at this point for this one. But it's easier to sit with a feeling that's labeled as good than it is to sit with a feeling that's labeled as bad.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Right? So removing that label or the mislabel with emotions particularly... they contribute hugely to conversation.
Yep. Well, and another, while we're on the labeling and mislabeling subject, I think another really important one to look at is this another thing that we talk about is the looking at the need and not the behavior.
Yes.
So labeling comes into play a lot with this.
Yes.
Like, let's just say that article that we kind of dissected.
Oh, yeah.
A couple months ago, right?
A couple months ago, exactly.
Where...
insubordinate behavior, insubordinate child.
Right. So because the child was enacting in insubordinate behaviors, the child got labeled as insubordinate.
Correct.
Right. And it was like what you were saying, also like what you say to yourself. Going back a couple, we were like, oh, God. I made a stupid move. I'm such an idiot. Or I'm so stupid.
Yes.
Right?
Overgeneralization. Like, yeah.
All right. It's mislabeling falls.
Under many of categories.
Exactly. Yeah. You know what I'm. Thanks for finishing my sentences.
It's what I do here.
Thanks.
But no, it's true. This also comes into play in many other negative thinking patterns. Mm-hmm. And it comes into play in communication. It comes into play with emotions. Like there's a lot of places where we label or mislabel things and then we take that label as fact instead of just a thinking pattern.
Well, I have a great example. Okay.
Okay.
We're going to talk about dogs. So somehow if we've gotten to a point, some of us have gotten to a point, right, where we label barking as bad behavior in dogs, mm-hmm. where it's actually just natural behavior. So we are mislabeling it and causing and punishing barking when it's just the natural, that's how they vocalize, that's how they react, that's how they even like growling to say, hey, back off, I don't want you to do this. People will be like, oh my gosh, what a bad dog, he growled. And it's like, well, that's just how they communicate.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so that's just a, you know.
Tangent, but I like it. It was relevant.
It's relevant. Okay.
Okay. And then the last one is personalization. And this one you describe as taking the blame for things that are out of your control that happen. Mm-hmm. And before when we were kind of talking about this episode, she gave a very like extreme, vivid example, but it works so well.
I read a lot of books. I watch a lot of anime, okay?
So it works very well, so I'm going to let her just go with it. So go ahead.
Right. So, and again, extreme example. But say, as a child, you were like, hey, Mom, I really want ice cream right now. Can you please go out and get it for me? And mom goes out to get ice cream and she gets into a car accident. Something happens. You then blame yourself. Well, it's I had her go out and get ice cream. I asked her to do this. It's my fault.
Right. Where the two are obviously unrelated.
Where the two are unrelated. Right. It could have been the distracted driver's fault, who probably wasn't your mother, because I'm just saying.
Because moms, right?
Moms. Or it could have been just, you know, an array of stuff, like the sun was shining in her eyes and there was a puddle and she tried to avoid a squirrel. Like,
right. It doesn't. We get the point, right? Right. That, yes, it is natural at that point to say, I feel like I bear some of the responsibility because if I didn't X, Y, and Z. But the truth of the matter is if that was in the cards.
Right.
And it was out of your control.
And again, that's an extreme. But if we're talking like in relationships, I'm trying to think of a less extreme example.
We don't think that way. So let's just talk about some of these and some tools that we've used to combat them. Mm-hmm. And not all of them, because some of them we don't actually fall prey to.
Yeah.
And they're not very common for us. But
for us. It doesn't mean they're not common for us.
Exactly. Others. But one of our therapists really helped us with this. The one that was... That helped us in the nitty gritty of, you know, when the communication was really bad and we just...
Well, not just our communication, but
our self-communication.
She was a huge piece of how we got to the point where we were able to look at these thoughts, analyze these thoughts, be aware of them, and learn how to speak to ourselves and understand that the way we speak to
she
ourselves
She was a huge
matters.
Piece. Yes, exactly. But
so, anyway, I love you. Thank you if you're listening.
One of the things that she used to say to both of us, because we fell into the same kind of patterns, was, where's the evidence to support that which you are thinking?
Mm-hmm. That which you believe to be true.
That which you believe to be true. And that was especially helpful with the overgeneralization.
All of these.
Really, yes, it was. But specifically, the labeling, mislabeling, the overgeneralization, the all or nothing thinking.
Oh, yeah. Jumping to conclusions.
And the jumping to conclusions, yes, in both. And catastrophizing.
Yeah.
Right? The catastrophizing was huge for me, like I said when we hit it. And, you know, and she'd be like, well, why do you have an emotional response to that? Why do you feel that way?
Right.
Why are you resistant to her wanting to go to XYZ?
And you'd be like, because of his historical circumstances.
Well, I would say because I won't be able to control it. I don't know. What if this happens? What if that happens? Worst case scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
And she would always say, okay, now ask yourself, where's the evidence to support that which you believe to be true? And I would naturally go back to historical evidence, right? Because it was there. And then she would point out, that was true then. Where's the evidence to support that it is true now?
Right.
And so it was always just challenging the thinking and bringing it back to my choice on how to think, respond, right? Bringing it back so that you could think about it and not be ruled by the emotion end of it.
Right. Yeah. So as far as tools are concerned, I mean, one of them we did actually mention earlier is, and I think this is kind of the first step, is try to, a little bit at a time, day by day, analyze the thoughts that come into your mind.
Why, right? Ask yourself why.
And if you find yourself falling prey to one or more of these negative thinking patterns, acknowledge that and then journal. Or, right? Because, and
however, whatever works for you,
or,
right?
Right? Note, take notes or however, but make a physical representation somewhere.
That you had that thinking pattern.
Right. Like make a tally or do something so that you can keep track of how often it's actually coming up and put it on physical paper or on your phone or something like that. So you're not just keeping a tally in your head, because I think it makes a big difference when you actually put it out. It's just like anything else, right? Like I'm putting my...
Oh, it's like when you're trying to watch what you eat, right? If you write it down for a few days, you become very aware of what you're putting in your mouth. It's the same with this. You become very aware of how often...
Of what you're saying to yourself.
One of these negative thinking patterns come into your purview or that are affecting your life. How often does it happen on a day-to-day basis? And then you can also see which ones you are more likely to fall prey to.
Right.
So that you can challenge the thinking.
Right. And then we find a statement that works for you. Right?
Yes.
To mm-hmm. to reframe. Ours was, because we just found it. It just hit.
Yes.
It worked. Was, where is the evidence to support that which you believe to be true? And that doesn't have to be your question. It could just be like, why do I believe that? Where is this coming from?
Right.
How can I look at this differently? Ask the questions that you need to ask yourself to reframe the thought. And then practice.
Yeah, exactly.
Practice. Because it, like we said at the beginning of this episode, is it's habit.
It's habit.
It's all about changing habits. And you only do that a little bit at a time, day by day. And it's never going to be perfect. But it's going to be better every time. Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, you just get used to doing it. And,
right.
you know, like anything else, depending on the day, the weather, the energy level that you have,
yeah.
right? And depending on all of those things, mm-hmm. you may be more aware or less aware.
Definitely.
That particular day. But when you get into the habit mm-hmm. or the pattern
right.
of analyzing your thoughts, taking the time to think, why am I thinking them? Where is this feeling coming from? Is it associated? Where's the evidence to support that which I believe to be true?
Right.
Right. Whatever words or totem or anchor work for you in that instance, but challenge it and notice it. And like you said, tally
practice.
It.
Tally
and practice.
And practice. Yep.
As you're sitting here thinking, I'm like, you know, a tally actually isn't a bad idea. Like, write the 10 thinking patterns out on a sheet with a bunch of little, I don't know, check boxes for
right?
a day. And so you can just check
to
and,
see.
You know, count it up at the end of the day or however you want to do it in your phone. But yes, the tally is actually a very good tool.
Yeah. And the last piece of this is to then give yourself grace.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Always.
Which is... I tend to forget to say it sometimes because it's like...
For us now, it's like an unwritten rule.
Exactly.
But yeah.
It's an unwritten rule.
Exactly.
Give yourself grace. Because, again, we are human and it is totally natural and normal for us to fall into these patterns. And once you're in the pattern, it's harder to get out, right? So
exactly.
You are unteaching yourself, basically. Especially if you've had this pattern your whole life, you
right.
didn't even recognize it. You've got a lot of unlearning to do. And so give yourself grace.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Well, I think that sums it up.
I think that does sum it up. This one is more of a, here they are, let's become aware of them, and then start challenging.
We can do it. We can do it together.
Challenge accepted.
Exactly. All right. We'll stop being nerdy now.
Well, we never will, but
okay,
thanks for joining us, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on our journey today. If you liked what you heard and are looking for more, make sure to leave us a review and subscribe to this podcast.
You can also follow us on social media. But for the most fun, go find us on TikTok at The Mother-Daughter Journey. See you next time.